barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
It is Monday, September 19th. Week 3 of college football is in the books. Count it. Book it. Really a shitty weekend of football. We went through it on the reaction show and call-in show yesterday. If you hadn't checked that out, it was a great show. Some good callers. And so if you aren't familiar with the platform and that show is out on our RSS feed for VIP subscribers, and VIP subscribers get the phone number to call in, and we give our reaction and thoughts and then interact with our subscribers. That's the point of it. And it was a great show yesterday. So I appreciate all the great phone calls. We're trying to find that sweet spot time on Sundays. The time is noon. That's when we need to do it. But my son has baseball from 11 to 1. So for the next couple of weeks, can't do it at noon. So we're going to try some evening times. We're going to play with it a little bit. But excited to talk about this weekend. Basically, every team that we thought should win won. I mean, it wasn't a lot of great games, but other than Miami, Texas A&M, which we're going to talk about that, we're going to break down Georgia's just bludgeoning of South Carolina. We're going to break down Ohio State bludgeoning Toledo. We're going to break these games down and see what we learned. Talk about kind of the national landscape today. And also got a little announcement, Coach's Film Room. It's basically every episode you come in a film room with me for an hour and I break down film and tell you what happened, show you why it happened, and give you just an enhanced experience into college football. So already we have an Ohio State breakdown out, Ohio State's offense versus Notre Dame. We have Alabama's offense versus Texas broken down. Today I'm doing the Jim Knowles experience, all three games packed into one massive video. We're going to break down the Ohio State defensive performance. Tomorrow I'm excited to announce that we also got Georgia's film. We have Miami's film. We have all of college football now. So this is about to go fucking crazy. I'm going to break down Josh Gattis's offense. Because he was on Twitter talking a hell of shit, talking hell of shit about how it was his offense at Michigan last year. He did call the plays, and everyone will see this fall. And he goes into Texas A&M, fucking just got beat by App State and put up 9 goddamn points. Got in the red zone 3 times, blanked to 3 field goals. His offense was atrocious. So I'm going to break it down play by play, and we're going to just find out how good Josh Gattis really is. So drop in the comments right now. Is Josh Gattis a good offensive coordinator? Yes or no? And do me a favor while you're there. Like this video. Subscribe to the channel if you haven't. And as we say, be a friend. Tell a friend. Send somebody the link. Tweet about the show. Help us make this grow. But enough about that, Chris. Let's get to the show.
Perfect. So the good old Urban Meyer curse. For those of you who don't know, every time Urban Meyer gets linked with your job,
you're done.
With whatever job, you're finished. It happened earlier this year with who? With Scott Frost in Nebraska. And Zach, we now have a second quote-unquote victim. His name was linked with Arizona State's job about 3 weeks ago. Yesterday, Herm Edwards got fired. Zach, is Urban coming back to Arizona State?
No. And these poor mid-tier programs, like he would take Nebraska over Arizona State for sure. And I don't know, he's not going to Lincoln, Nebraska. He's not taking that job, but he would certainly go there over Arizona State. But these jobs, these messages, I think people do it on purpose. They try to get some buzz going to get the media firestorm to come and get a guy fired because they, you know, these beat writers, they are unhappy with their coach. So Arizona State press, they're all unhappy with Herm Edwards. It's been an epic failure. His, you know, I don't know if you want to call it a return. He it's an NFL coach that took a college job and it was an epic failure. Fucking imagine that. It usually works both ways. You bring in an NFL coach into college. Rarely does it work out the way that it's supposed to because you need to have experience in the industry you're working in. They're very different industries. But these schools like Arizona State, like Urban Meyer interests, like Urban Meyer's not going to Arizona State. What are you talking about? And so it's just, it's, I mean, I guess it served its purpose, right? Like Brett McMurphy creating a story about me got Urban to resign. So it served a purpose and it got him back in the headlines after getting fired in a disgraced career at ESPN. I mean, he got tossed to the side and he needed to come back and be relevant somehow. And he's a huge flaming fucking douchebag. So he latched on to some bullshit story about me and, you know, gave a scorn ex-wife her a microphone and here and it worked. His name was all over the place. Urban, you know, got suspended, then ended up just resigning and walking away from Ohio State. So it worked. And that's the sad state of media, right? The Urban Meyer interest at Arizona State, like, shut the fuck up. There's no interest with Arizona State. You're just trying to get Herm Edwards fired. But I will say, the video you sent me this morning was awkward. Mm-hmm. Like, they grabbed him on the field. I think it was the AD and president or whoever
AD and president.
Grabbed Herm on the field after the game Saturday, and it was an awkward conversation. You could tell it was basically like, yeah, it's probably it. We're going to have to meet tomorrow. And Herm was like, it was just a very awkward interaction.
Like on the field, like right after the game, like he's on his way to the tunnel. Super, super awkward stuff. I don't know why he would do it there. And again, you know, these mid-tier programs, well, first of all, for a coach like Herm Edwards to be at Arizona State, I mean, he lost the players. Like Johnny Wilson, who was their top wide receiver, I mean, would have been, went to Florida State. And then obviously Chip went to Ohio State for a backup role. Something wasn't fitting right over there. And clearly it kind of ended. So it is interesting. And moving forward, I am intrigued to see what that, like, who's interested in that job, but I don't think you're going to get a real marquee name. It's going to be like a hot coordinator, I think, on their way up.
Yeah. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that as long as it's the right hire. But I mean, Arizona State has not made a right hire in a long time. But yeah, it's anytime you see something like that, like Chip Tranum was the starting running back at Arizona State.
Correct.
And he transferred to Ohio State to just for the chance that he could compete at linebacker. Like, that is called smoke. Where there's smoke, there's fire. And there certainly was a fire here. And you hit the nail on the head. He lost the players. And once you do that, it's over. So, I mean, not that anyone gives a shit about Arizona State football. It's just funny how Urban gets linked to it. Boom, dude gets fired. We should just, I mean, I really want to start linking Urban to LSU and some of these programs that I think these coaches need to get the fuck out of there.
Facts. One quick note on Arizona State, Zach. You know what I would like to see at Arizona State? I'd like to see them call Mark Helfrich. And Mark Helfrich calls Scott Frost, get the band back together, and run back the 2014 Oregon team. Because that's what it was, Zach. Scott Frost was the OC at Oregon. And then when he left, the Mark Helfrich thing fell off the wagon. That feels like a good spot for both of them to be reunited, unless one of them goes to the, you know, good old Saban School of Rehabilitation. All right, Zach, we got to do it, man. I got to do it. I don't know if this is the order you want it in, but we got to talk about Miami. Because, holy... I did not think, like, I thought they were better than that. Like, if you told me that Appalachian State and Miami would hold Texas A&M to both 17 points a game, the one that I thought would win the game would be Miami. But here we are, and I was wrong. Welcome to the Josh Gattis experience.
Well, I mean, the reality is that offense is pathetic. And, I mean, Tyler Van Dyke didn't play horrible, but he didn't do anything to win the game, right? He was 0-for-3 on deep balls, 12% under pressure, 14% versus blitz. The Miami receiving core had four drops that were crucial, and it just was a putrid offensive performance. And I don't like their offensive scheme. Josh Gattis, I think, is a below average coordinator. I mean, you look at it, Miami's defense played decent. I mean, they only had eight missed tackles. They actually won the missed tackle battle, right? A&M couldn't run the ball on them, 3.9 yards per carry. Miami just couldn't push the ball down the field. I mean, they only threw three deep balls and they didn't hit on one. When that happens, you're not going to open up the offense. And I was wildly unimpressed with Josh Gattis's offense. And it's kind of the same story I said all of 2020 about Michigan. It's this offense is fucking just blah. It's just, I don't know what this fucking is. So we're going to break down the film tomorrow in the coach's film room on Patreon. Because I'm going to detail every, and you know what? I might put that one out publicly since Josh Gattis wants to run his fucking mouth so much publicly. I might put that video out publicly to everybody so you can see why Josh Gattis's offense sucks. And then, I mean, on the other side of the ball, A&M replaces Haynes King with Max Johnson, and he was consistent. I mean, consistently average, right? He had a 50% completion percentage when he was kept clean, when he was under pressure, when he was blitzed versus base defense, you name it, half of the time. He completed the ball. He was like you at a bar, Chris. He only hits half the time, and it's always on the easy ones.
Man,
and he can't hit them deep. Did not even attempt a deep ball in the game. Sounds like Chris Drew at the bar.
Oh, chill on me. Anyway, about A&M, Zach, Gattis had to scheme up something for A&M. Like, he had to put together an offensive game plan to beat A&M. Like, he had to. Like, A&M is having some culture issues. They had players leaving the hotels. They had players sending out bad tweets. They got players reaching out to other schools, even though they're not allowed. They got a ton of issues, Zach. And yet, here we are, and they still were the favorite. I mean, Max Johnson didn't do anything. They both scored 17 points back-to-back weeks.
Yeah,
I mean, that is what the offense looks like.
I mean, A&M is just not very good. They don't have a quarterback, and they're just not very good. I mean, just simple as that. That was two average football teams. And I think Miami actually, I mean, like I said, I think Miami's defense was pretty good. And I think the offense, they have some skill there. I think Josh Gattis is the issue, just like he was in 2020 for Michigan. I mean, these guys, it's like you don't become a big time coordinator out of nowhere. Josh Gattis was so awful at Michigan that he got everything stripped from him, that Jim Harbaugh took over and put that product on the field in 2021. And then Josh Gattis leaves because he got his powers taken away, goes to Miami, and he's still that same average ass coordinator. Like, I don't know why that was. People thought that was going to change, but the guy didn't fucking go to Nick Saban's school of rehab for 3 years to learn offense. This guy has been riding a fake
Mike Locksley.
Yeah, I mean, he rode Mike Locksley's coattails, Bama, goes to Michigan, does a horrific job as a coordinator. I mean, it's just mind-blowing to me that people actually thought he was going to be worth a shit. And I even blame myself a little bit for it's not that I thought he would be good. I just thought Mario would be running the show, because it doesn't take long for you to realize this coordinator is not it, and Mario's an offensive guy. And unfortunately, he didn't.
Well, I mean, if you look at Mario and kind of like his offensive philosophy, it was very similar to last year's Michigan. Like, I mean, they both want to win kind of that same style. Like, some new stuff, but a lot of the stuff, they like to run the ball. But you know what Josh Gattis is like to me? He's like that really good movie trailer. You know, number one movie in America. Like, all the gimmicks in the trailer, you know, speed and space, the win over Ohio State, all of that. Pounded into one, and he'll remind people, like, what is the speed and space offense supposed to be? Because, Zach, they only completed four passes that traveled further than 5 yards down the field on Saturday against A&M.
It's really not, I said it before, it's like slow and confined spaces. It's not speed and space. It's just like we just talked about, where there's smoke, there's fire within a program. When a coach is on Twitter arguing with fans about his competence, he is very incompetent and insecure, right? That's what it is. Because a competent coordinator that knows they are really, really good, they don't care what fans think, because they know what the deal is. They know they are the real deal. If you're not, you have to scream at fans that you were the calling the plays at Alabama. You were, you know, it was your offense in 2021. Like, you have to tell fans all this stuff to try to, you know, appear competent. To give the illusion that you're this great coordinator / coach. The smoke was there, and now we had a fire on Saturday.
Zach, I want to ask another question, kind of a recruiting question. South Florida is kind of, you know, home to the elite skill position players. How easy is it going to be for guys like Brian Hartline, or if you were coaching again, for you to recruit against a guy like Josh Gattis for those kids in South Florida?
Well, I mean, Mario's still going to do a good job on the trail, but I think it's going to be a lot easier to recruit receivers, because, I mean, it's simple. Just put on a cut-up. Like, you just show them a cut-up. Like, here's Miami's offense. Like, here's what they do. This is what you want to play in? I mean, if you do, that's fine. I mean, Miami's right down the road. I get it. But here's what we do. And then you show them your cut-up. I mean, that's what Alabama should do. That's what...
Is that what you did in the past?
Oh, absolutely. If a kid was down to us in Miami, I would just... When he came on his visit, we'd sit down and we'd watch Miami film for 30 minutes and then watch Ohio State film for 30 minutes and honestly say, hey, honestly, which experience do you want in your career? Which offense do you think gives you the best chance to display your abilities and get you to the next level? And you put on that film and it's not even close.
Because there are some very, very talented receivers from South Florida coming up right now. And a lot of them, you know, kind of have put Miami on kind of this like wait and see mode. And so that's not obviously the result you want. It's from the receivers. No. I think Miami as a whole will do a good job recruiting. But from the receivers, it's not, you know, can't be encouraging at all. Zach, I want to move forward a little bit to another team. Penn State went down to Auburn and did their thing. Let's talk about it. Is Penn State a contender?
I mean, listen, Penn State looked really good, and I know Auburn is not a great team, but this is how good. And this here, okay, so here's the red flag, right? I thought Penn State was ridiculous getting after the quarterback. TJ Finley was all over the place, but they had 17 missed tackles, and Auburn only had 5. So this is like the anomaly weekend. Like, if you don't tackle well and you win a game that big, it means they can clean that shit up, right? They're going to have to. That was the first team they played with decent skill. So missing that many tackles will kill you. And honestly, if they didn't create 4 turnovers, Auburn would have won the game. But 4 turnovers, you get Penn State 4 more possessions, and that game got out of hand. But they won the game here. Sean Clifford was not under pressure at all, which is kind of anti-Auburn. They usually get after the quarterback. They're just undisciplined. They only had 5 quarterback pressures in the entire game. Penn State had fucking 36 quarterback pressures in one game, which is insane. 6 sacks. They had 3 3 sacks combined versus Purdue and Ohio U, and they had 6 against Auburn. And then you look at the 3 D linemen that really led the charge. Chop Robinson was a terror. As was, I don't know how to say his name, Adisa Isaac, is he the one defensive end they had? And then Jordan Vandenberg, they were in the backfield the whole game. I mean, those 3 combined for 14 of the QB pressures just alone. They had 19 different defensive players pressure the quarterback. They were all over the place. And then Nicholas Singleton, the freshman running back, is a fucking dude. He is a dude. 12.4 yards per carry, on the road in an SEC stadium. It's just... Penn State look good. They look legit. They are a contender. I don't know if they can beat Ohio State or Michigan, but they are right there, and that's not going to be an easy win, especially at Penn State. But the moral to this story is, Brian Harsin, what the fuck? What was you doing, Auburn? You hired a Boise State Bronco lifer to be your head coach. What did you expect? I mean, this is going exactly as I said it would when they hired him. You talk about a head scratcher. What search firm did you hire? Blow that fucking place up. They are awful. Mm-hmm. Brian Harsin. That's who we went with at Auburn.
Not a great choice. And something that's really telling to me as well, Josh Pate was on the field for the game. And one thing he said is you could feel the gap in physicality and speed Penn State had over Auburn. You're not used to hearing that when talking about SEC teams, because usually even on TV, like, you watch Georgia, how they feel, how they fly around and they hit. It's like, oh, wow, there's a gap there. Yeah, for it to be vice versa is really impressive for Penn State.
And here's the thing. Like, it's been that way consistently in the SEC. I'm talking about even like Mississippi States of the world, that they're not in playoff contention. They're not the upper echelon of college football. But when you step on the field, you see like their D tackles, like Pernell McPhee was one that I vividly remember. You just looked at him. You're like, what the fuck? Is that a human? Is that a real human being? Like, that doesn't even look normal. It looks like the Monstars from Space Jam.
They are the Monstars.
It does. And you're like, they might not be a great team. They might, go 6-6, but they have some freak shows on the field. And for that to be said about Penn State over Auburn, who, I mean, Auburn always looks the part. They may not play the part, but they look the part. And so for Josh to say that just shows, one, how good of a job Penn State has done bringing in talent, and two, how down Auburn is.
Yeah. So it is impressive. And Manny Diaz has gone to Penn State and done a good job. I think he's better in a coordinator role, and there's nothing wrong with that. Some coaches are like that. Zach, last year's Penn State team was a top 10 team until Sean Clifford got hurt. And obviously the depth with Will Levis being gone, really, really struggled. This year, they look to be a top 15 caliber team. They have more depth, it feels like. They look legit, like they could potentially be. They're top 3 team in the division. And I want to talk about one of the other teams just real briefly. Are we going to judge Michigan at all yet? Are we still waiting for them to play somebody?
Here's the thing. They have the weakest schedule in the country. Everyone knows that. 131st out of 131 teams. They've played 3 awful football teams. But you still can watch the film, which I have. And you still can see that this team's really fucking good. I mean, they go and play UConn, who's terrible. I know. They only had 1 missed tackle, by far the low of the season. Like, that's hard to do against your scout team. Like, someone's going to miss a couple tackles.
Someone's got to make somebody miss, right?
And 1 missed tackle. That is incredibly an incredibly well-coached defense. They only have 14 through 3 games. So they're averaging, around 4-ish per game. I get the competition level. That's impressive. And J.J. McCarthy has been good. He's got a lot left to evaluate. He didn't throw a deep ball in this game, right? 145 of his 214 passing yards were on RPOs and play action. So they're, you know, more open concepts than just drop back, right? Through three games-ish, I know he didn't start the first game, he's a perfect 4-for-4 on deep balls, 91% adjusted completion percentage, 83% versus the blitz, 8-for-11 on throws over 10 yards. He's averaging 12.5 yards a carry. I know this is the weakest schedule in the country, but they look really good.
Yeah.
And so the tests will come, right? We will learn more about J.J. McCarthy when he plays a formidable opponent. But you can't knock this team because they've played no one. They've done exactly what they're supposed to do against these three teams. And a lot of teams in the country can't say the same.
And this week will be the first start of their, you know, quote unquote tests. They have Maryland this week, and I mean, that game. We're going to break that one down, of course, later in the week as well.
Yeah, I'm so excited to talk about that game because I think it's they're going from playing dog shit to playing probably the fourth best team in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they get a cupcake Indiana to get into Big Ten play. They got to play the fourth best team in the Big Ten. So one of the, you know, top third of the Big Ten.
One of the other top dogs in action, maybe the top dog. I was waiting for our guy Kirby Visor to get in here, but Kirby Visor is nowhere to be seen. Don't know what's wrong with them. But Georgia, bro, they put a beat down on the Spencer Rattler Experience. They've looked really, really good. Their offense looks good. They're running some freak shit that you've kind of referenced before. In South Carolina, I thought that Spencer Rattler would elevate them, and that has not been the case at all.
Yeah, Spencer Rattler is fucking terrible. And I said he was terrible at Oklahoma. I said he was terrible in the transfer portal. And he is still that same terrible-ass quarterback. He had a 26 QBR. 26. He is awful. So he needs to go yell at his high school receivers some more and be a big fucking douchebag, because that's what he was on QB, whatever that QB1 show was. And that's what he's been in college. An epic fucking disaster. He was 3-for-13 under pressure. Spencer Rattler was going to be the unanimous number one pick going into last season. 3-of-13 under pressure with 2 interceptions. He was terrible. But this Georgia defense is the real deal. They had 5 missed tackles in this game. And as opposed to Michigan, who has 14 missed tackles on the year, who has played dog shit. I mean, Georgia had played a decent Oregon team. We watched what Oregon just did, right, against BYU. South Carolina is a decent team. They're not as bad as what Michigan played. Georgia has 13 missed tackles through 3 games against a decent slate. That's wow. Just wow. And
they're so good.
And you look at Stetson Bennett has been outstanding. He has silenced so many people, myself included. But the thing about this Georgia offense is it is efficient. It's not that explosive. They don't hit a bunch of big plays. They don't run the ball for 12 yards. They get 5-yard gains, 4-yard gains. And then Brock Bowers is a human highlight reel. That's what this offense is. I mean, Stetson Bennett is better than I thought, but he's still not dicing people up with the throw game down the field. I mean, he was 8-for-8 on throws in the middle of the field. Most of his throws were in the middle of the field. He was 0-for-2 on deep balls. He was 7-for-10 versus blitz. Those 3 incompletions versus blitz were his first 3 incompletions when a team blitzed all year, which is incredible. I mean, he's 25-of-28 for 363 yards versus a defense that blitzed him through 3 games. That's impressive. 25-of-28 when they blitz. Now, Georgia's offense, speaking of efficiency, they only had 9 third downs in this game, and they were 56% on third down, but that's a low number of third downs. That means your first and second down offense is cooking, right? 6 yards per carry in the run game, over 11 yards per attempt in the pass game. They are legitimate. And then this secondary is the real deal. And I didn't talk about it in the offseason, honestly, because I haven't talked to him since, you know, towards the end of last year. But one of my former GAs and a stud, and I've talked about him on the show before. He was at Rutgers with Graciano. He was at Temple before that. He is a stud position coach. It's Fran Brown, who's the new corners coach at Georgia. His dudes are balling. 3 interceptions in this game alone.
I was low on Keeley coming into the season. I didn't think Keeley Ringo
I still am low on Keeley. I think he is overrated, but I think the secondary as a whole is really good.
I mean, he's had people on straps, and honestly, like that Oregon win over BYU kind of cements, okay, wow, there's really levels of this, and Georgia is a level above. Two of those deep balls that he missed on, the two that he missed on Zach, they were back to back, and that's what forced that third down. So they threw back to back deep balls, first one to a black guy, second one to a white guy. Just thought that was important for the narrative of our show.
Mistake number two right there. But Chris, before we move on, I wanted to lead the show with this, and I forgot. I wanted to talk about the NFL weekend because, first of all, I slaughtered it this weekend at the sports book. Mm-hmm. And so I want to bring in one of our partners, MyBookie, who's an unbelievable sports book if you're interested in sports gambling, because this week is a hell of a slate. We got the Monday Night Football games tonight. Then we got Tom Brady versus Aaron Rodgers. We got Mac Jones versus Lamar Jackson. Some incredible, incredible games to bet on this weekend in the NFL. So I want to give you my two MyBookie plays tonight. I'm taking the Eagles to cover -2.5. And the Bills Titans over 47.5. I think Josh Allen lights it up. I think the Eagles win the game by 3 or more. So those are my two picks. If you go to MyBookie, we use promo code Menace, you get a double deposit match still. So go over there, throw 200 in. They'll give you $400 of free play, essentially. Go lock these bets in. I killed it this weekend, and I'm looking forward to killing Monday Night Football. MyBookie is it's a great place to bet. And just put your money where your mouth is, and you'll get rewarded for it. And we have our handicapping service. We have our handicapper come on every Friday. We're giving you the picks. I'm giving you the sports book. Go to mybookie.ag and use promo code Menace and lock that in. I'm becoming an NFL football fan, Chris, and it's crazy because I've never really been one.
My guy, man. I love Garrett Wilson. I call him skinny Jamar Chase all the time. Like he is
cooking.
Ridiculous.
He cooked my Browns.
He was fucker. Cooking. I mean, say it to his face. I know you would though. That's the funny part.
Yeah. Well, I might text him after the show and be like, don't do my Browns like that, dickhead.
Grimy. Grimy. Oh, they said we got an answer for that Nebraska pick. We're sorry.
No, I already did yesterday. I mean, you saw what I was, my gut feeling
you
was.
You literally said there's no good reason to pick Nebraska here.
I said this is probably not going to happen. There's no good reason analytically or on film. No chance, right? Mm-hmm. But then I just felt like they would have a fire lit beneath them. And you watch how the game started. 3-and-out, marched down the field and score. And that was the fire I was talking about. It was just like a little match, a little flame. Yeah. It just wasn't engulfed in flames. It was just like a little spark. So that's what I thought I would see. But that game, I mean, Nebraska had 16 missed tackles. Casey Thompson is average as the day is long. I mean, two of his 12 passes past the line of scrimmage were outside a hash mark. So 10 of his 12 were right in the middle of the field. He was 33% versus blitz. Dylan Gabriel wasn't much better, though. 25% under pressure. He only completed 59% of his passes, 1 for 5 on deep balls, 4 of 12 on throws over 10 yards. That's 33%. So Oklahoma is a phony. I'm lifting the skirt up. There is not a dick under there. That is a phony, phony team. But Nebraska's really bad. So I own that one. But I told you it was just a gut feeling that was based on nothing.
Okay. Zach, Notre Dame. That boy Tommy Rees got the best agent in the world. And I got some fun facts about Tommy Rees here. But they struggled again, man, to beat Cal.
Tommy Rees is a lot like Josh Gattis. And this is what's going to happen. People are going to blame Marcus Freeman. All this stuff about Marcus Freeman shouldn't have been given this job. He's in over his head, all this other shit. Let's not forget, Notre Dame forced Marcus Freeman to keep Tommy Rees. That is a bad formula in any way, shape, or form. You can't give a guy the keys to your program but then make demands on what pieces he puts in place. That is where Notre Dame fucked up, because Tommy Rees, this offense is awful. He's dog cussing the backup quarterback who actually played well. He only attempted 3 passes over 10 yards because of this inept offense. They don't have great skill on the perimeter. He was 2 for 3 on those 3 passes over 10 yards, 67%. He missed his 2 deep balls. That's the only thing he did. And he completed his 1 intermediate throw. I mean, Tommy Rees is taking out his own incompetence on his backup quarterback on live television. It's a shame to see. Like, he yelling at the kid to do his fucking job. Hey, Tommy, do your fucking job. How about that? The putrid-ass excuse for an offense that you're putting on the field at Notre Dame, Marcus Freeman should be screaming at you like that in a closed door meeting to do your fucking job. Your team and the coaching staff is counting on you and you're fucking it up. Your ineptitude and incompetence. Do your fucking job, Tommy. Stop yelling at the backup. He played fine.
I guess I wanted to ask you, how often does that happen? Like, it just felt like a lot for him to be screaming at the backup quarterback like that. It was like a moment of fuck, I'm about to lose my job.
Like, never in any scenario should you be screaming at the quarterback during the game? After the game? In meetings? Absolutely. On the practice field? But during the game? That's the worst coaching I've ever seen. That is a fragile position. And you yelling at him like that and diminishing his confidence in the middle of an athletic competition is fucking stupid. This is not a wideout now that just has to run routes, catch the ball, and keep it high and tight. This is a quarterback. It's really fucking hard to play quarterback. I used to sit back there when we do team versus defense. I used to stand behind the quarterback. And that shit, if you've never been there, you talk about chaos. Like, you have to process all this information, deliver a football 20, 18 yards down the field on a dot while mayhem is going on right in front of you and all around you. It is insane. So the ability to perform in that scenario is already hard enough. To be screaming at your quarterback in the middle of the game, that shows me, again, like Josh Gattis arguing with fans. Tommy Rees is screaming at the backup QB because shit's not going well. His game plans aren't working. His offense stinks, and he's losing it. He doesn't know what to do right now. He is in panic mode, and his reaction is scream at the player.
Which it felt like a moment of panic, because that's all I was thinking the entire time he was screaming is, oh my God, like, you're yelling at this kid to do his job. Like he's been vaulted into action before he was ready. And here you are. And
Chris, he didn't play bad.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't messing anything up.
He wasn't the issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's incompetence.
Yeah.
Incompetence.
So here's like what I'm trying to reset. So I guess, they're like every year at Notre Dame, there's like the message boards, we've got this five-star quarterback. Oh, we've got this five-star quarterback. And the rumor or the belief now is that Tommy Rees has been telling the media that he's got silent commitments from all these guys, and then they don't end up getting any of the guys. Like, they thought they had a silent commitment from Dante Moore, and it was like a group of writers that all put it out. And then all of a sudden, Dante went to there was a belief that J.J. McCarthy was him, and that he was silently committed, and then he didn't commit, and then he committed to Michigan, and then kind of the media within Notre Dame said, oh, we heard that Notre Dame staff turned him away. And so it's like this odd, like, we're going to land a five-star every single year, and then no one knows what happens, and it's the same three writers that are close to Tommy Rees that keep putting that stuff out there, that he's an elite recruiter. So just for what it's worth, I don't know how often you really talk to the media about who you've landed or not, but I thought that was very interesting note, because it seems every year, Zach, they have a five-star silent commitment, and then they don't end up with a five-star commitment.
Silent. It's because it's really, really silent. Like, you can't ever hear it, not even when it's public.
Super silent.
It's very super silent. You're never going to hear it.
He signed the letter of intent with the invisible ink as well.
Right. Disappearing ink.
Notre Dame has North Carolina up next, Zach. They could be running into a buzzsaw, and I can't believe I'm saying that about North Carolina, but that could get ugly given the fact that, given how we've seen North Carolina.
It never works. Mm-hmm. When you force a holdover on a head coach, that's never a good deal. It didn't happen with Urban at Ohio State. He was given the keys and said, fire everybody. He didn't. He retained Luke Fickell. He retained Mike Vrabel. King Bronco's in the building. The Wolverine himself. Tommy Rooster ain't nobody. Tommy Rooster ain't anybody. Was a Maine moose house, and he ain't nude how many mulch is sometimes. And a football put in a wagon was out. Screamed.
Facts.
Fucking, I think, preach, King Bronco.
I honestly think I understood what you were saying there.
King Bronco, DM me.
Please.
I need you on the show.
Pause the chat. All right, Zach. Any other games you want to break down from this weekend? I think I hit all of them, but I do not remember.
Well, yeah, we got to talk about Ohio State, Chris.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, of course, that was going to be the kind of one I go with last. And ask you, of course, it's Ohio State. What do you mean?
I just wanted to touch on a couple things. Obviously, a landslide victory, but a couple things that I think that we learned or of note. First of all, and I saw this against Notre Dame, and I should have talked about it more. I think the best defensive end. You talk about pass rushing defensive end. And I'm, when I put out this Jim Knowles defensive film room episode on Patreon later, go to Patreon, go to the link. It's right under Chris and in the bio. Sign up. We're doing coaches film breakdowns every day this week. You're going to see some plays against Notre Dame and obviously against Toledo where Javonte Jean-Baptiste looks like a fucking freak of nature. And I think he might be the best defensive end on this team when it comes to pass rush impact. And I know it's easy to say that now because he has two sacks. And he leads the defensive end group in sacks. But I saw some flashes in Notre Dame where he made a couple plays, even in the run game, where you're like, holy shit, this motherfucker is tall, long, athletic. His burst is insane. He's gained a little bit of weight. I mean, a ton of weight since I left. And I think he's got a chance. to be ridiculous. That's not to diminish what JTT and Jack Sawyer have done in the run game. Zach Harrison made a couple plays that I was impressed with, but he's flashing a little different to me. He might be the most dynamic defensive end on this roster this year.
You're the first person I've heard say that.
Well, he had four quarterback pressures against Toledo and two sacks, so it's an easy time to say it. But I've been, as I broke down the first two games, I've noticed him. He's flashed. I noticed him on film. And when you do that, it's like, ooh, this kid might be really good.
So is he good enough? I don't know if you've gone through it all the way. Is he good enough to kind of be in there on rundowns as well? Because if you look at our defensive ends, I mean, kind of the pecking order from what I see is it's JTT, then it's Jack Sawyer, then it's Zach Harrison, and then maybe it's Tyler Friday.
No, Tyler Friday and Jerron Cage, I think, are undeservedly playing football right now for Ohio State. I think they need to be backups that get in and mop up duty. And just based on three games of performance from what I watched. I mean, Tyleek Williams has been a fucking an absolute disruptor, and you haven't seen it as much on TV or stat lines, but I watched this film. He's splitting double teams, beating guards all over the place. Michael Hall Jr. has been outstanding. Teron Vincent has been outstanding. The four DNs we just talked about have been great. I think this defensive line group is potentially the best in the country. They just need an impact pass rusher, which they don't have right now, right? Alabama has Will Anderson Jr. Like, these schools have an impact pass rusher. Ohio State doesn't have that yet. Part of it might be scheme that they're going against. It's kind of an excuse, but if they could develop one or two really good pass rushers outside, their two D tackles are the best pass rushers on the team, which is a great problem to have for your interior. Not that great on the exterior, right? You want your what do they call him? Leo Jack? Jack-off Leo? Whatever. Okay. That guy needs to be a disruptor, right? He needs to get to the quarterback, sack the quarterback. And so that's the one thing that I think is missing on this defense. And also the secondary has given up a couple big plays, right? We saw Cam Brown kind of lose leverage and didn't believe that the kid was going to run up a deep post, and he did, and he outran him and, you know, made one play. We've seen Denzel Burke struggle, but I think this defense is coming along nicely. And I think the D line I've been impressed with. If they can get to the quarterback a little bit more, this defense has a chance to be really fucking good.
I want to ask you about sack totals, because I feel like JT and Jack Sawyer, and I guess Javonte as well, have all been extremely disruptive, and you've seen offensive lines kind of adjust to them even without the production being there. But they're not getting home and getting sacks. Does that concern you in the long run, or you think teams are just getting the ball out quickly? Because Jack Sawyer only has, you know, one sack, even though it feels like he's had way more, and, you know, a couple tackles for loss. And then JT has zero sacks. And so that's something that really does intrigue me in terms of, okay, like we feel the disruption, but we're not getting the sack numbers out of it.
It'll come.
Why is that?
It'll come. Okay. I think this defensive line has been so used to being in a scheme that wasn't conducive to them getting after the quarterback, right? You play soft zone coverage, that ball gets out a lot faster. And so they haven't been in a pass rush mode really for 2 years. And so now they're trying to unleash it, and they are doing it. It's just going to take a little time, right? There's development over the season. I think it's going to happen. From what I saw on film in those three defensive games, they are being disruptive. They are beating pass pro. It's going to come together at some point here, and it might come together this weekend.
So I want to talk about what you just referenced, the soft zone coverage versus kind of a lot of press man stuff. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of the struggle we're seeing with Denzel Burke? Because last year, obviously, he was a soft man.
They played a lot of press man last year too. Okay. Denzel Burke, honestly, is just he's a young corner. I mean, you watch him in the Notre Dame game. When you watch this cut up with me in our coach's film room episode, there's clips in the Notre Dame game where he gets cooked off the line. The ball doesn't always go there, but he gets cooked off the line. He's not great in press yet. That's all it is. And he played press last year. He wasn't great in press last year. He's a young corner that's probably playing before he should be. That's just the reality of what it is. He'll get there. I think he's talented, but he struggled a little bit because he's young.
Yeah, and that's fair. Obviously, you know, he was an athlete in high school, played a lot of receiver, and then kind of made the switch to cornerback once he got to college. And usually when that's the case, you don't start right away.
No doubt. And the other thing of note in this game is I'm so excited to see where that quarterback from Toledo is going to play next year, because he was fucking dynamic. Holy shit. I mean, Ohio State had 12 missed tackles, 12, basically all on that kid. I mean, it was unreal. And Toledo had 16, so my formula still hit in this game. They had a bunch of missed tackles too. But and honestly, I think Toledo had a decent game plan. They just got outgunned in every way, shape, or form. I mean, they tried to blitz the shit out of C.J. Stroud. The problem is he just torched them when they blitzed. He was 11 for 15 for three touchdowns when they blitzed. He played outstanding, and he ran the ball twice. They didn't think that was going to happen. So shout out to C.J. Can we all get a round of applause for C.J. Stroud for running the fucking ball? Great job, C.J. That is on film.
And we need an amen in the chat.
Can we get an amen for CJ Stroud running the ball? I know you all have been as frustrated as I have been. So get an amen for CJ Stroud running that football twice, not once, twice. Great job, CJ. Now that it not only is that on film, but he needs to keep adding that. Yeah. It can't be something where, okay, it's on film now. You don't have to run anymore. No. When the defense gives it to you, you have to take it. So that was outstanding. And here's a side note, Chris. Right now, CJ Stroud is the number one graded quarterback in America on Pro Football Focus, ahead of Tua Tagovailoa.
Oh, so those are the top two?
Top two graded quarterbacks on Pro Football Focus. CJ Stroud, one. Tua Tagovailoa at Maryland, too. And I plan on doing kind of a first quarter breakdown of the season. I usually do it after week three, but now they play like 16 fucking games. So I might wait till after week four, to get, that one conference game under their belt. And then we'll do a full-on breakdown of the national landscape, how people are playing, and give you some analytics after I study all the film and look at all the stats and analytic tools that I do. But yeah, CJ's, despite people talking about him, he struggled a little bit against Notre Dame, or he won't run the ball. Like, he's the number one graded quarterback on Pro Football Focus in America.
I love it. I love it. Speaking of that, Bryce Young threw two picks on Saturday. I don't know if you saw. I'll make sure I grab those and cut those. just some funny stuff. Hey, Zach, I want to just real quickly. I didn't write this in the show notes, but I want to ask you, if you were these schools, would you take Finn next year in the transfer portal? And I'm going to ask about some big schools because – Stenson Bennett has been in college for 37 years. At some point, it's going to run out. If you're Georgia, would you take Finn?
Yes.
That's a big leap. Like, can you win at that level? If you're Texas A&M, do you take Finn?
Fucking yes. God, they have no one.
If you're Kentucky, Will Levis is gone. Do you take Finn?
Absolutely. Kentucky's already on the phone with the kid right now.
If you're South Carolina and Spencer Rattler's gone, or maybe he stays, do you take Finn?
I mean, yes. Who doesn't take him is a much easier conversation, right? And I don't even know that Ohio State should. I don't know that Ohio State should, because I haven't, even in the Toledo game. Again, Kyle McCord is a jag to me. He's a guy I haven't seen it from him yet. And Devin Brown didn't really have much to do, but
didn't get to throw anything.
Devin Brown, I think, could be, but the reality is Ryan sees in practice, right? He knows what he's got in the quarterback room, and that kid was dynamic as shit. I mean, so dynamic.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was actually fun to watch. Like,
he looks like he needs to go replace Malik Cunningham at Louisville.
He looked like everything we thought Malik was.
I mean, it's like Lamar Jackson, Malik Cunningham, this kid. I mean, it's just dynamic athletes with the ball in their hands that can throw it a little bit, right? That's what they are.
Yeah. I can get behind that. I mean, I think the kid's really fun. I mean, it was fun to watch the kid. Obviously, it's not fun watching him, like, kind of, bludgeon your team every now and again. But, it was really fun to watch. Zach, I do want to talk about our receiver room. We had three sophomores all go over 100 yards, all have a touchdown. They look good. These receivers are back. And also, Julian Fleming looked good.
He did. So you got to consider the competition level, right? Toledo's defense was bad. But Julian Fleming showed up. I mean, that catch he made in the end zone on the sideline was, it was superb. It was an unbelievable catch in traffic, contested catch, got his feet in bounds, phenomenal catch. So, yeah, I mean, I don't want to overstate how good Julian Fleming or Jaden Ballard is, because I still haven't seen what I need to see to say that they belong in the rotation with the other three. But they showed up and did what they're supposed to do against Toledo. Now, some of the absurd things, Chris, you put that clip out of Jaden Ballard, like, who does he remind you of? And people are like, Devin Smith, Chris Olave, Ted Ginn. I'm like,
we got one KJ Hill.
Fuck me. Wow. Are we just, let's just call him Chris Carter, best receiver that ever played. He's arrived because he caught a ball wide open against Toledo and outran Toledo. And I'm not trying to shit on the kid. He played a great game, but pump the brakes. That team was awful that Ohio State just beat. And I didn't see anything that tells me that either one of those kids is a big time player. Julian did look good, though. I will give him that. He looked good.
No, Julian to me looked like he knew what he was doing out there. Yeah. Like, there was no like panic running like we saw from him his freshman year. Like, yeah, he no looked doubt. Like he knew what spots to go to. He looked like an improved route runner from what I saw on the TV copy. And during the scramble drill, he knew where you would want him to go. I was really impressed with Julian. It was cool though watching the Ballard gear up like that. Like, the kid's fucking fast. Like,
he can run straight. He can definitely do that.
It was kind of a weird moment because like he was like kind of almost not running fast and then just like boosted up and leveled up and got out of there. But Zach, with these three sophomore receivers, I know that you still think at least two of them have proved it in Emeka and Marv. When can we start talking about Marvin as one of the nation's best?
When he does it against good competition. He's yet to play well against good competition because that Notre Dame defense has been awful. Mm-hmm. And he didn't look great against them. That's the best personnel that he's played against. I mean, Utah was a depleted secondary. Arkansas State, Toledo, he's shown up against mid-level competition. Can he do it against really good competition? And we're going to find out here down the stretch when he has to go against Michigan State secondary, when he has to, which hopefully is improved with all the transfers. I haven't watched them yet. I know they just lost embarrassingly, but he's got to do it against, he got to show me in the Big Ten against some, you know, potentially NFL corners. Like, can he get open against Penn State and Joey Porter Jr.? Can he get open against Michigan secondary? That's when we'll know how good he really is. Because right now, he's the mid-level competition killer. And that's not a knock on him. That's what he's supposed to do against those teams if he is a great player. But a great player has to do it against every level of competition. So we'll see. He's still on a we'll see mode.
I guess like part of it, Zach, is what I'm seeing is he's executing it at a high level, and the body control stuff and the freakiness that we heard about this offseason, we're finally starting to seeing it on the field. So to me, it projects like a guy that should be able to get opening against guys like Porter, who I know you're not as high on as everybody
else.
Yeah,
I'm not as high on him, but if Marvin Harrison Jr. had to go up against Joey Porter Jr. tomorrow, it would be the best corner he's went up against in his career to date. That's not saying Joey Porter Jr. is a great player. That's saying his Marv's resume thus far has been, you know, he hasn't went up against anybody that's going to play on Sundays. So,
yeah, he just looks so freaky to me. And I think that he is one of the best receivers in the country. And I know there's some worry about JSN, but JSN just got out there, just make sure he could go and get some confidence back and kind of play a little bit. There's no worry there. We've seen JSN get open against the guy that Zach's talked about. I mean, it's obviously about, you know, getting up against those guys. But Zach, our guy, Kate Stover, man, after a couple days to sit on it, how do you feel about him getting open, getting active?
I'm here for it. I think it is a recruiting ploy to tight ends everywhere. I know for a fact that they had that directive going into these two games. They knew they were going to win both games, and you know they knew that they should win them both handedly. And the whole concept was we have to get Cade involved because we might not throw it to him as much against Wisconsin or Michigan State or Michigan, but against these lesser teams, when we play Indiana, when we play, you know, Toledo, we have to throw the ball to the tight end. So at the end of the year, they have some stats. We have some film. We can show tight end recruits, look, this is what we could do. We did this with Cade Stover. Imagine what we do with you and your talent, right? Because you see what George is doing with Brock Bowers. This motherfucker, he's getting deep balls thrown to him. They're handing jet sweeps off to him. They gave him a reverse. You talk about feeding a tight end. What tight end in the country doesn't want to go to Georgia?
Exactly.
There's nowhere else I would go if I was a tight end other than Georgia. Because look what they're doing with this kid.
Mm-hmm. It's like we're getting receivers at a high clip. They should be able to get every single tight end. I do think it's interesting, Zach. Next week, the tight end from Florida that's committed to Ohio State, Jelani Thurman, I believe he's coming to Ohio State for the visit. I mean, again, I wouldn't be surprised if Kate Stover gets some catches and some touches. His hands are much better than I thought. Much better.
I mean, I had heard he had really good ball skills, and I knew he was tough, and I knew he was a great blocker. I was actually he's not a great athlete, but I was impressed the most with his athleticism. I mean, he runs decent routes. He gets out of breaks decently. He has exceeded what I thought his ceiling was in the throw game for me.
And Jeremy Ruckert, again, has to be absolutely livid.
He's fucking just livid. He's in New York air. Just pissed off right now at Kevin Wilson.
Just so angry. I mean, the one time that we unleashed Jeremy Ruckert, we ended up bludgeoning Clemson. Like, that was the only time we unleashed him.
Yeah.
4 years. All right, Zach, another question. I want to talk about the running back room after a couple of days to sit on it. Are you worried about the room? Are you worried about kind of Trey and the injury? Do you think we're thin there, or do you think Dallin, if needed, can play?
I mean, I think he's a serviceable backup, but I think Mayan Williams is one of the best backs in the country. He might be about fourth or fifth on my list right now, but I told a couple of the coaches, I said, when I watch him run, I literally think, did this whole defense run a train on his girlfriend? Like, why is he running like this? Jesus, because he does. He runs like he is trying to hurt everyone. Like, he's trying to fight them as he's running. It's fucking amazing. So aggressive, so violent, so physical. Like, I am in love with this way, the way this kid runs the football. I have never seen anything like it. Zeke ran hard, and Zeke was one of the best I've ever seen, but he didn't run like this kid. This kid is trying to punch you in the face, and like it is, he's just, it's amazing how he runs the ball, and I love it.
I can't believe you just said that. I mean, I guess you're right. I am curious your thoughts on Trayvon Henderson so far this season. It looks like he still is kind of lacking the patience required and needs to work on that and kind of mature a little bit.
A little bit. I mean, I'm not.
I mean, like, why has Mayan been more effective than Trey?
Well, he runs harder than Trey. Okay. What I just said, he runs with more aggression than Trey. And like I said, I think they need to find a way to get Travion in space. But Travion's going to pop one of these games. It might be this weekend, assuming that he comes back healthy from that whatever he was in the boot for, that ankle. He's going to have an explosive game where you're like, there it is. That's what I was expecting. And it's going to happen. He'll end the year with 1,000 yards probably. And everyone will forget that he kind of had some injury bug and didn't explode early in the year. By the end of the year, he's going to explode on everybody.
I honestly think they should kind of deploy him the same way they kind of put up with a plan for Evan Pryor. Like all those Evan Pryor touches that they talked about scheming up with, they should immediately give those to Trey because he's dynamic in space the same way Evan was. So I'm hoping at some point we get to start to unleash it as we enter kind of Big Ten play. Anything you're looking for, any other closing notes on Ohio State before I get to the Super Chat, Zach?
No, I mean, I thought it was exactly what you needed and wanted if you're a Buckeye fan. The defense gave up a couple plays, so what's going to happen, especially in an offense like Toledo runs and an athlete like that quarterback is. But other than that, I mean, it was sheer domination. I mean, from the clock starting to it hitting zero, they dominated.
Is it possible that CJ Stroud doesn't know how to slide?
Yeah, it's definitely possible.
Because that's what it looks like. I just wonder if that's the kind of hesitation to run. Because he just cannot.
This is going to be a nice parallel. We had a girl like that on my daughter's softball team who wouldn't steal bases when she got the steal sign because she couldn't slide. So maybe that's what it is. He has this 10-year-old girl complex that he can't slide. I mean, what the fuck are we talking about? Who's a 21-year-old like Heisman candidate? If he can't fucking slide, go out on the turf and work on it. Like,
No, Zach, there's been cases of guys not being able to slide. Like RG3, when he got to the NFL, they had to teach him how to slide because he couldn't. He kept messing up his ankle on slide attempts.
That's what I'm saying. You can work on it. What the fuck are we talking about? This is big-time college football. Oh, I can't slide, so I'm not going to play the game. What?
Well, let's see. That's the only reason I think he hasn't been running. Because, like, he'll run when it's an open lane. Like, he looks athletic when there's an open lane. But when it's not an open lane, like that one awkward, he looked like Bambi and then just fell over on his face. It's like if you can slide, you can run full speed. So.
I don't know, man. I mean, I played baseball my whole life. Like some people couldn't slide till they worked on it. Then they could slide just fine. Sounds like they need to have sliding practice. What the fuck are we doing? We're talking about sliding practice. Like, hey, fucking figure it out. I don't know what the fuck to say. Tell you. Ohio State has great baseball coaches. Go get a baseball coach to do a sliding lesson with him.
I mean, just call Corey and invite him out to one of your son's baseball practices. I mean,
I'll go teach that motherfucker how to slide. It ain't hard.
Bet. Everyone tag CJ Stroud when I clip that video up and send it to him. Anyway, I'm going to get to a couple of super chats, and then we'll get on out of here. Our guy, thank you for the two. Just an idea, but do the call-in show from 7:15 to 8:25 on Sunday. Yeah, that's a good idea.
It's a good idea. That was kind of our intention. We did a little early, but to hit that void in between the 4:25 games and the 8:30 games. So I think we talked about doing it a little later. I think that's the time slot. So we'll try that 7:15 to 8:25. And see how that does, which the call-in show did great. I mean, it's already like 8,000 views. So it's not that it didn't do well. I just want to make it more accessible to subscribers and people where they say, all right, there's no football on. I'm going to call in and jump on this call-in show for an hour. So that's a good call. We'll do it at 7:15 this coming Sunday.
Our guy, MC Robinson, thank you for the five. Did y'all see those two moments, Notre Dame's game with Manti Te'o returning and the OC ripping the quarterback?
I didn't see Manti Te'o return. I did obviously see the viral clip of Tommy Rees ripping the quarterback that we discussed earlier.
Mm-hmm. It was definitely a weird telecast. That whole game felt weird. MC Robinson, again, thank you for five more. During Houston versus Kansas game, two Houston players were fighting on the sideline. Coach Smith, were there any fights on the sideline at Ohio State?
No, never. What are we talking about? It's an awful, awful culture. Like you get in we saw it. Who was it in the NFL? We saw it.
It was those two Bama players, the two Bama defensive linemen. Right. They were on the team together. They're just bickering and then started fighting on the sideline.
Yeah, it's a bad deal. I mean, I get it. Kids get heated, but you're in the middle of a game. He's on your team. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, I guess this is more question. I guess it's a question for both of us. Travis Hall, Keon Keeley. That's the 5-star defensive end that was committed to Notre Dame, but then he decommitted during his visit to Bama. He was at Ohio State on the week of the Notre Dame game, Zach. He's coming back this week.
Mm-hmm.
As a coach, is that a really good sign?
Really good sign. Mm-hmm. Really good sign. I do know that I've heard that he has a Bama visit, his final visit. He'll go to Bama after that. And that is that is the whole key here, right? They're getting him to come up a second time, you know, in the same month. That's mm-hmm. massive. That means that Larry Johnson has this kid's ear, and this kid is seriously considering Ohio State. That was not just because you could have said, oh, this kid's going to go to Bama. He just wanted to be at the premier game opening weekend, right? That happens all the time. That kid could have just come on the trip just to be at that game and see that atmosphere. But that wasn't all it was. Or if it was what it was, Larry Johnson flipped it, and now there's genuine interest. So you can never count out Larry Johnson on a big-time defensive end. And the kid coming up a second time shows you there's genuine interest, but they cannot let that kid go back to Alabama. Mm. If they need to lock it up this weekend, lock him down, get him committed, and get him to shut it the fuck down. Because if he goes back to Bama in that last visit, Nick Saban is going to get that kid.
Something interesting, Zach, he's coming up with the elite Florida kids. There's like a group of Florida kids that are very, very talented, including, you know, five-star Brandon Ennis, who we think highly of, Jeremiah Smith, who is very talented, obviously five-star next year's class, JoJo Trader, number two player in the country next year's class. Like, they are coming with a lot of Florida kids, and Keon obviously is from Florida. I think that is important and interesting, and I know I dropped a couple nuggets about kind of what he's been doing in the meantime between these visits. I'm more confident today about Keon Keeley than I was the first time he came up, given the fact that he is making that return visit. Yeah. Cody, our guy, thank you for the two. UGA and for a rude awakening against Tennessee and Bama. That one's for you, Kirby's visor.
I'm here for it, man. Those are the two games I got circled. Tennessee, Georgia's the game that I'm most excited for, because we'll see how good Hendon Hooker is, and we'll see how good this Georgia team is.
Josh Wilson, wow, what the hell is wrong with the Bengals O-line?
I don't know, but I'm going to throw this up there, because if you can do it, I don't know if you can do a prop on over under sacks, but take the over every game for Joe Burrow, because Christ, this dude's running for his life. I meant to put this up earlier, but I got my little Prize Picks parlay here. So you go to prizepicks.com. There's an app and the website, obviously. They're a partner of the show. It's all fantasy bets, where you go on and you can put these different fantasy numbers in and pick more or less. So this is the one I'm running with tonight. $100 wins 500. Justin Jefferson over 7 catches. Stephon Diggs to score a touchdown, and Treylon Burks to go under 2.5 catches. That's my Prize Picks combination for the day. So go over to prizepicks.com, use the promo code Menace, you get a free deposit match, and play this with me. I'm playing this with my free dollars, free 100. That's what I got. That's my Prize Picks.
Prize Picks. Michael, thank you for the 5. When does Ohio State try more DBs with Burke getting dunked on consistently? And do you think teams will keep lobbing it when he's one-on-one?
Yeah, teams are going to keep trying him until he shuts it the fuck down. But you know, you don't want to just try kids out in games. Obviously, if he keeps up this performance, hopefully they develop someone to take that role, or they develop him to stop giving up these plays. I mean, one of the two has to happen, but they're going to put their best 2 on the field. And right now, Denzel Burke is 2. And at some point, you hope that whoever number 2 is, whether it's an improved Denzel Burke or an improved, you know, whoever, that person stops giving up these plays, especially to Toledo and Arkansas State. Like, come on, man, what the fuck are we doing? We are Ohio State.
We are Ohio State. Scott, thank you for the 5. Shout out to the kid from my hometown, walk on TC Caffey, for the highlight reel against guys who I'll be bagging groceries next week. But damn, great play.
Good great play. Play. Great play. And even the coaches were like, what the fuck? Like, we put our walk on in, and then he rips off a 58 yarder or whatever it was. It's like, sorry, Toledo. Like, what do you want us to do?
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. There's like a lot of Toledo fans talking about, you know, no class from Ohio State hanging 70, but they were just handing the ball off to a walk on.
Tackle the fucking back. But great play by that kid. Shout out TC Caffey.
Yeah. Just lost his black stripe too. Elks, thank you for the 2. Mike Evans, pussy ass, suspended 1 game.
Man, what a lame move. These SEC fans are all at my neck because I said he was a bitch. How is it? You can't be a man and look at what he did and not say, that's a bitch. I mean, Marshawn Lattimore was talking shit to a totally different player. Mike Evans came off the sideline and blindside laid him out. Like, if you don't think that's a bitch move, you're a bitch. I mean, that is a bitch made bitch move.
Andrew Johnson with the hot take. Thank you with the 5. I would take DJ or Finn over McCord right now.
Me too. I'm telling you, this is going to be a portal season for Ohio State, unless Devin Brown is that guy.
I mean, those 3 sophomore receivers, like, we should be the portal destination for any quarterback that wants to come.
Absolutely.
Like it's a loaded room. Andrew, for the five more, thank you. Of these Ohio State receivers, which would you want? Santonio Holmes, David Boston, or Garrett Wilson?
I mean, my answer. Call me biased. I'm taking Garrett Wilson.
I'm taking G-Dub. Like I think G-Dub is sensational. And I think he's going to continue to prove it in the NFL.
I called it rookie of the year. Yeah. People said, how good do you think he'll be? I said rookie of the year.
Right. That was one of our early shows last year. We talked about that. Like the only comparable to like 2019 LSU versus 2021 Ohio State was like he is Jamar Chase-esque. Like he's that level player.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's a freak. Amar, thank you for the five. Which remaining defense is left on our schedule that has the ability to shut down our offense? Do we lose the game?
I mean, 100% Michigan is that team. Michigan has the best defense that Ohio State's going to face. And I mean, no, I don't think they're going to lose that game for a number of other reasons, not because Michigan's defense isn't good enough. I think that because it's at home, because of last year's win, they'll have a chip on their shoulder. This is a rivalry game now. It doesn't always come down to who's the best defense or offense and whose film is better or stats are better. Like it's a rivalry game. And it's back. If you haven't felt it, it is back. And back in the 90s and 2000s, like the better team didn't always win. So I think Ohio State wins the game, but Michigan is by far the best defense they're going to face in the regular season.
Yeah. Omar, thank you for the five more. Is Mayan the best running back on the roster right now? I think so. And I think Zach agrees with me.
Yes.
I think he's definitely been the most effective. I think Trey's probably more talented if you look at like traits. If I was building a Madden running back.
I mean, he was sneakily the best running back on last year's roster. I mean, when you look at how many forced missed tackles, how many yards per carry, like he was a little bit better than Trey last year, but we all chalked it up to Trey's a freshman and he'll have this big leap into his sophomore year. So he'll be the best running back. I don't know that happened. And Mayan got better too. So
he's
the best running back on roster, but I think Ohio State has two really good ones. So it's plenty of riches in Tony Alford's room.
Plenty. Easy. Thank you for the two. University of Washington's offense looked dynamic. I didn't even watch that game, Zach.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet. I'm going to, though, because I saw what they did to Michigan State. So, who knows? Washington could be a surprise contender in this whole thing. Can they unseat USC and Lincoln Riley?
The answer is no. But anyway, Zach, I got nothing left for today. You got anything else you want to hit? Or are we good?
No, I appreciate everybody. Just go check out the Patreon. I'm telling you, these film breakdowns are worth every penny. I will refund you your money if you aren't satisfied. There's literally no risk. Go sign up for $20 a month and break down film with me. And if it's not valuable, you don't like it, you don't want to watch it, shoot me a message. I'll shoot you your $20 right back. Go check it out. I'm telling you, it is fucking... you're going to love it. So that's all I got, Chris. Menace out.
Menace out.